be more proactive in describing ourselves so that people can point to the right opportunities.
Welcome to Midlife Mixtape, the podcast. I'm Nancy Davis Coe, and we're here to talk about the years between being hip and breaking one.
Where do I belong? Tell me why I'm here and what's taking this long. When can I move on?
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/midlifemixtape. Are you guys heading to the beach or the pool and hoping to catch up on some summer reading? You know what? Bring your headphones and listen to a book instead. That way you don't get the book-shaped tan. They've got over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. So if you want to give Audible a try, head on over to audibletrial.com/midlifemixtape for your free audiobook. Hey everyone, this is Nancy and I want to welcome you to the Midlife Mixtape Podcast. I hope summer is off to a great start for you and you're wearing your SPF 35 and your big floppy hats to try to reverse the damage we did in the 70s, sunbathing with tinfoil put over gatefold albums and Bande Soleil everywhere. If you're in the Bay Area, come on out on Thursday evening, June 20th at 7 p.m. to a great good place for books in Oakland, where I will be, air quote, in conversation, close air quote, with author Mary Laura Philpott about her book, I Miss You When I Blink. Mary Laura was a guest on this show back in April on episode 52, and I asked her a ton of questions then, so I'm going to have to dig deep on Thursday night to come up with something new. So there are either going to be some really weird questions at that event, or I'm just going to say, here's Mary Laura, and just see what she does with it. So what do you vote? What do you think I should do? And if you want to stay updated on my forthcoming book, The Thank You Project, Cultivating Happiness, One Letter of Gratitude at a Time, head on over to davisko.com, that's davisko.com, like my last name, and sign up for the mailing list at the bottom of the page. I won't spam you, I promise, but I do have some really cool Spotify playlists that go with the book, and I'm going to send those out to everyone on my mailing list when it comes out on December 3rd, so join up, davisko.com. Today's podcast guest is Karen Walrond. Karen is a leadership coach, speaker, and author whose mission is to help you name your gifts, attain your goals, and make light. Karen is a former engineer and an attorney with degrees from Texas A&M University and the University of Houston Law Center. She was the former chief counsel of Landmark Graphics Corporation, one of the largest software companies in the oil and gas industry, as well as the former chief of staff for a Fortune 200 corporation, and she remains an active member of the State Bar of Texas. Karen was named one of 40 over 40 women to watch in 2016 and was named one of the YWCA Houston's 2016 Outstanding Women of the Year. So let's start making light with Karen. So I want to welcome you to the Midlife Mixtape Podcast, Karen Walrond. Thank you so much for being here today.
Look, this is such an honor for me. I cannot believe I'm actually on this podcast. This is so exciting.
Oh, please. I don't know what you've been reading, but none of it is true. And yeah. All right, so here's the first question. I think you may know this is coming at you. What was your first concert and what were the circumstances?
Okay, so I have to tell you, my first concert is pretty great, and I'm pretty sure that I'm going to beat everybody who's been on your show previously. My first concert was the Jackson 5.
Lovely. Where?
Isn't that in Houston, Texas, at the Arena Theater. Mm-hmm. And the Arena Theater is this tiny little theater that I think still exists, but it's one of those theater in the rounds. It's a circular theater and the stage rotates.
Okay.
Right? Like this might be very 70s. I haven't seen one since then, but it was 1978. And I was a pretty new immigrant to the United States, right? Because I'm from the Caribbean, from Trinidad. And I had just moved to Kingwood, Texas, which was, so this was the late 70s. And Kingwood was and is a predominantly white suburb of Houston. Mm-hmm. And a neighbor down the street invited me. And I think, honestly, it was because she was Black. And I think she felt sorry for me because she was like one of the few Black people there. And she had Black friends that didn't go to our school. And they were all going.
Okay.
And so she kind of was like, let's invite the foreign Black girl to go, which is awesome, right? Like, that was fantastic. We never ended up being close friends for no reason other than sometimes that happens. But yeah, it was great. So it was her and maybe two or three other friends. friends and me and her mom, and I think she had an older sister, because I was in 1978. What was I? I was 11 years old. So I think she had like a 15 or a 16 year old sister, and the mom like dropped us off, which is wild. And I just actually looked it up. It was when the Jackson 5 Destiny album came out. So the song that was fantastic was Shake Your Body Down to the Ground, which they played for like 20 minutes.
That was my bar and bat mitzvah standard dance part. Like that was the year I was hitting a lot of bar and bat mitzvahs, and I had a whole routine to that one. So
right? It's like the best song.
It tells you what to do. Shake your body down to the ground, everybody.
It does. And during that song, this is the best part. So during that song, we had decent tickets, but it was a small theater. So it was hard to have bad tickets. But we made our way to the stage, and the love of my life, Michael Jackson, grabbed my hand. Which was amazing at the time, a little skeezy now, but amazing.
I know we know what we know now, but in 1978, holy smokes, did you, how long till you washed that hand?
It was a good week, I think. It was pretty spectacular. So yeah, so it was pretty great.
Yeah, I think any concert that ends with the headliner holding your hand, that does put you in the top tier. I don't want to say that you beat every other person who's been on the podcast for first concerts, because it's a very subjective measure, but Michael Jackson grabbing your hand during a 20-minute rendition of Shake Your Body Down to the Ground, that's pretty special.
It's pretty great. And then I think months later, my parents took me to like the Osmonds. So, you know, highs and lows.
What a letdown. You know, I know through your work, you help high-performing people find purpose in their work and their lives. And I wondered, does that ever include having them pick their walk-up music? Because to me, that's like the best thing you can do to hype yourself up. Like, I'm going to this meeting and here's what I'm going to play as I enter, at least inside my head.
You know what? I have not done that, but I kind of feel like that's a service I should provide now. So thank you for that inspiration. That's pretty great.
It's a new exercise. You can call it the Midlife Mixtape Warm Up.
I love it. Do you have a song?
She Will Have Her Way by Neil Finn. I may be old, but I'm someone new. That's how it starts.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
that's
epic. It's always the right song. So you're a leadership coach who focuses on helping executives infuse their lives with purpose. And I wanted to start off by talking about whether there's something about midlife that makes people want to do that. Who comes to you? What's the trigger? Is it related to age? Is it related to something else? Who are the people that you're helping?
My clients are actually, without exception, women. Mm. They're all women. And they are from various backgrounds, right? There's a geophysicist, there's a priest, there's a surgeon, right? There's a lawyer. They really have very wide backgrounds. One owns a gym. But what's really interesting, and I hadn't thought about it until you asked this question, was that the younger clients, because I think the youngest I have is in her 20s, they tend to be much more about how can they have successful careers, period. Like they have their chosen career, whatever it is, it's geophysics, or, you know, they're an executive at a tech company or something like that. And they are just trying to navigate sort of the politics and, you know, what it takes to kind of keep going,
right?
Which is great. But then I have the ones that are sort of closer to my age. So maybe I'm weeks away from 52. So usually maybe from 48 older. And those are the ones that are actually kind of like, no, man, I need to start creating legacy work, right? So it's people who are either switching careers, a lot of people who are starting their own businesses and want to do it right, as they define right. But it's far less about financial success and far less about politics, that kind of thing, because I think certainly by our age, we've sort of figured out how to navigate a lot of that, and far more about how can I make sure that the work that I'm doing gives back in some way.
So can you shed a little light on what your process is for helping them figure that out? I don't want you to give away any trade secrets, obviously, but I'm curious to know how you help them discern that.
So there's two things that I've sort of trained in. It's sort of how what guides the work that I do. So one is Brené Brown, who's a very dear friend of mine. I'm trained in Hobart.
Well, could we stop for 1 second? If you guys saw the movie Wine Country, I'm telling tales on you, Karen. If you saw the movie Wine Country, there's a scene where all the ladies notice that Brené Brown, the great inspirational author, is sitting in the restaurant, and they run over and swarm her. the striking tall woman sitting right next to Renee, that's Karen. That is Karen. She was called in. So we can talk about your movie career too. But
oh, yes. The one I was discovered, right? My Oscar turn at sitting next to Renee, gaping crazily and not saying a word. Yeah. So Renee and I have been friends before she was the Brene Brown, right? Like since she was just a Jest, which is funny. I mean, I don't mean Jest in a pejorative way, but just a professor here in Houston. And so she invited me to train in her work because I do a lot of public speaking and she was turning down a lot of public speaking. And so she was like, look, people always ask, you know, who would I recommend? And I can recommend you, but I also want, and she goes, I don't necessarily want you to talk about my work, but I know that if you do, you'll do it in fidelity to the work. So, you know, I invite you to get trained in it because she trains therapists and helping professionals and leadership coaches and all of that all the time. Like that's one of the ways that she gets her work out into the world. And so she invited me to do this. This was a couple of years ago before I was a coach, actually. And of course, I mean, if anybody's familiar with Renee's work, she does some really wonderful stuff with courage and vulnerability and empathy. And so that she was actually really the inspiration for me doing more like one-on-one training as opposed to just workshops and the kinds of things I was doing before. So that was one thing. And then the other thing that I got trained in is something called positive psychology, which I promise this will get to your question in a minute. But positive psychology coaching is different from regular coaching in that often coaches, when they work with somebody, they'll figure out what's going wrong, right, and try to fix it. And what positive psychology says is if instead you focus on what has gone right and do more of it, you will have more success. So a lot of what I do when I'm working with people is find out their story and find out where they've had success in their life and where their passions lie. And my first session is always free. And the first thing that I always do in that is have them imagine their dream life, right? Like, what does it look like? Describe it to me. So when they do, then I'm like, okay, well, let's figure out how far along on the journey are you, right? And then how do we map out the steps to get you there? And in general, like I've never had anybody, first of all, what's really interesting to me about that process is nobody ever says things that are outlandish. You know, like if you asked me and I said, oh, I'm going to be an Oscar award winning actor based on my, you know, sitting there gaping and mouth with Brene, like nobody says that kind of stuff. Like there usually is some really cool stuff that they're already doing in their life that gives them a glimpse of this perfect life that is actually attainable, which is really, it's very, very cool. And so then we map it out. We work through it. I give homework every time we meet, sort of based on the goals that they want. And then we, you know, every time we meet, we kind of revisit how they've done. And if they've done it, great. If they haven't, then we talk about what got in the way, have goals shifted, that kind of thing. And, you know, just sort of readjust. But a lot of my work is sort of accountability buddy kind of thing. Like it's somebody that keeps pushing you along the path that you're setting for yourself. So it's a lot of fun. It honestly, it's been so great because I feel like I'm meeting all of these amazing, interesting people who want to do amazing things. And I get to have a front row seat, which is really, really fun.
And do you only do it in person or do you do that coaching online or the phone?
Mostly virtually. Okay. So mostly, you know, in front of my computer screen.
So if anybody listening was interested in working with you, what's the best place for them to go to find out about it?
KarenWalron.com, KarenWalron. Just click on coach and it will tell you everything. I love it. It really is. It's one of those jobs where I'm like, I can't believe I get to do this every day, right? Like it really is a lot of fun.
Well, and I have to imagine it's based in part on the fact that you yourself made a pretty giant transition. You were in the corporate world for many years, and then you went from being a corporate lawyer to a leadership coach. So take me back to the moment when you decided to do that.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, it's funny because there were a couple of steps between that, right? So I was a lawyer for many years. I did software licensing law primarily in the oil and gas industry at a Fortune 200 company that everybody has heard of because it's been in the news. And not Enron, just by the way. not Enron. And I did that for a long time. You know, my life has always been sort of, well, this isn't fun anymore. What can I do next? That is how I've done that. So I was an engineer first. And then after being an engineer for a while, I was like, this isn't fun anymore. So I went to law school. And then I really actually enjoyed being a lawyer for a long time. And I did well. I became general counsel of a subsidiary of this company, and then I became the chief of staff for the CEO of this company, which was amazing. That was actually the best job I ever had, was as chief of staff. And then I went back to law, and it got to the point where I was working, you know, sort of 15, 16 hour days, and I was a young mom.
I was just going to say, was your daughter born yet at that point?
Yeah. And that's not to say I don't still work crazy hours, but I decided I needed to work crazy hours on my terms, right, as opposed to someone else's terms. And so I ended up quitting. And by then I had already been blogging because my daughter was adopted. And I mentioned I'm from the Caribbean, my husband's from England. And so we had family all over the world. And so I had started this blog to kind of keep people up to date.
And the blog is called Chookalunks. You better spell that one.
Yeah. Chookalunks. It's actually one of those things that once you can pronounce it, you can spell it. So Chookalunks.
And I'll put links to all of the things that Karen and I talk about into the show notes, so you'll be able to click right there to find it.
Yeah. So anyway, so I started blogging, and I had been blogging for a while. So when I quit my job, I was like, well, I knew I didn't want to be a full-time stay-at-home mom because I just wouldn't have had the patience for it, honestly. You know, I'm sure my daughter thanks her lucky stars that I felt that way in a lot of ways. But I also wanted to be more present for her and be there. And so I thought, well, what can I do? And so I really literally was like, okay, I love public speaking, I love writing, and I love photography, I love shooting. And so what I'm going to do, whatever it is, it's going to involve those three things. And I kind of built my site out to say, these are what I do. And I opened myself to opportunities that allowed me to do two of the three things at any given time. So like when I speak now, even I always use photography as part of my talks, right? So I try to combine them, right? And so I did that for a while. I wrote a book called The Beauty of Different that did really well. And I wrote it as a vehicle for speaking about the thing that makes you different and the thing that makes you unique is actually a gift and something that I think we're called on to use to help change the world. Mm-hmm. And so I had been doing a lot of speaking on that. And then from there, I went back into coaching. I'd had this huge, long career in corporate America that was pretty successful. And I thought, well, there's got to be a way that I can combine those things. So the coaching has actually been pretty recent in the last couple of years or so. But yeah, there were lots of steps on the way.
Well, when you look back at that, and I'm going to use the word journey, although honestly, I've been watching The Bachelorette with my daughters this summer, and that word has been ruined for me by that TV show. In fact, I have been ruined by that TV show, but it's the only time my kids will sit with me on the couch together. So there you go. I'm stuck. Okay, I'm in.
The things we do for our children. God.
Well, I give a lot of commentary. I'm surprised they still want me to watch with them because I see it as a jumping off point for mom's theories on dating men and how you conduct yourself in the world. But nice. If you look back at your journey, what surprises you about it? What is there anything that you wish you had known in terms of that sort of long and winding road you took to where you are right now with the coaching?
Is it bad to say no?
No, of course not. It's reaffirming to say yes.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I've been really lucky in that, you know, I mean, everything has sort of downtimes and stuff, but I can't think of any job that I had where even when it was tough, I wasn't learning something really valuable. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I mean, I followed my curiosity everywhere, which I think is really important for all of us to do. And I wish more people did it. I was very lucky in that, you know, like when I was an engineer, I was bored out of my mind.
What kind of engineering were you doing?
I was a structural engineer. I thought when I went to engineering school that I was going to be building skyscrapers and suspension bridges. And in Texas, when you graduate in the late 80s, what you do is you build oil refineries, which was really boring for me. But I did like using that technical part of my brain, that analytical part of my brain. And it is something that prepared me for law school and prepared me for so many things, because there is a very strong analytical part of me. And there was some honing that happened there. You know, even things that I'm like, I would swear now that I would never go back to. I'm glad, I'm happy for having done them.
I think that's a really healthy attitude. And I am happy because a lot of people who come on the show are at that point too, where they look back and say, I didn't really love it at the time, but this is what I took from it. And now I recognize that it was for a purpose. So I've gotten very zen, you know, when younger people talk to me about looking for a job like this and I can't find it, but I have this other job. And I'm like, you know what? You're going to learn something there. You don't know yet what it is, but there's a reason for all of it.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. So here's one thing that I probably didn't realize until later in life. I wish I had taken more agency in describing what it is that I do and what I can bring to an organization. And here's why. I think a lot of times, like, I'm just like, oh, a job opportunity has opened up. Yeah, I can do that based on their description. And so I will apply for it and get the job, which is great, right? And of course, that's a good way to do it. But I think that especially now, and this is maybe the reason I didn't do it in the past was because it was so long ago and we don't have the tools that we have now. But I think especially now with like LinkedIn and all of these tools that we have where we can actually describe and tell the story of who we are and what we do and what our gifts are and what our talents and our experience is, to be more proactive in describing ourselves so that people can point the right opportunities to you.
No, totally. It's one of the things whenever somebody says, would you help me look for a job or could you pass my resume along, I always say, can you send me 3 sentences about what you want to do? Because if you can't yourself boil it down into 3 sentences, it's really hard for me to recommend you to somebody else because I'm not sure what you want to do. There's jobs all around, right. But do you want to do them? Maybe not. I don't know.
That's so great that you tell people to do that. And I'm totally going to steal that because
you know what it also does? It's the wheat from the chaff because not that many people follow up and send me the 3 sentences. And then
well, there's that too.
That saves me some time.
But like, for example, like I had one client, she's no longer a client now, but we actually work together. She's quite young and her experience outside out of college was always with a church. When we were talking and I was coaching her, she was like, I don't want to work for a church anymore, right? Like I'd rather do something in business. And I said, well, what do you want to do? Like, what did you do at the church? And she told me, she's like, I did the social media and I did, she told me this. And I'm like, okay, well, what would you call somebody who does that kind of stuff? And she was like, well, sort of digital strategy and social media manager. And I'm like, well, describe yourself as that. And so she goes, well, isn't that lying? And I'm like, well, but you just told me that's what you did. And she said, yeah. I'm like, then how is it lying? And she goes, well, so I can change my LinkedIn profile to say that? I'm like, yes, call yourself a digital strategist and this is what you've done. And then list the churches below, right, as where you worked. And she's like, oh, I hadn't even really thought about that. And I said, well, if you don't do that, of course, when you tell people I'm looking for a job, they're going to be like, oh, you know what? My church is looking for this or because that's what they'll think.
You're limiting yourself. Yeah.
So that I probably didn't do a lot of, but especially now with the kind of tools that we all have, I think it's really important to do that. To really sort of take that ownership and do it.
Yeah, and I imagine it opens up so many more doors than it would to just wait and be told what it is that you might fit in with, take ownership of that narrative. Yeah. So I want to pivot a little bit because I know you're also an outspoken leader in the arena of valuing cultural and racial diversity and inclusion. I know that's a big part of your work. Mm-hmm. So here's my question, Karen. Is your work getting harder or easier in 2019?
Oh, this is my favorite question that you're asking me. I think my work is getting easier, and I don't think that's a good thing. Here's why. Because I am definitely getting approached to talk more about diversity and inclusion, both in like speaking, at organizations, but also one-on-one coaching. People like are very mindful of wanting to be, inclusive as a manager or wherever else, which is a good thing, except I would suggest that perhaps these people who are asking me are not the people that need the work, right? Mm-hmm. That the people who don't value diversity and inclusion probably wouldn't be coming to my Black immigrant butt in the first place, right? For help. Honestly.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know if it's a good thing. Like I would love to say it's getting easier, but honestly, the people who seek me out are kind of on the path already, right? Like they're already thinking about it, which is great. The question becomes, how do you get everybody thinking about it? And is everybody thinking about it? And I feel like certainly over the past, let's say, I don't know, coming up on 3 years, people have been far more divisive. I think the climate has felt more racially divided than maybe in previous years. And it's felt that way. I don't know that it is that way, but it feels that way, right? People are louder about how they feel about race and inclusion and not always in the positive way. So when I saw your question, my first inclination was like, oh, it's harder. And then I thought, no, actually it's not. It's actually a whole lot easier, but I don't know what that really means. I don't know if that's saying that society is getting better. I don't know, honestly.
What do you wish that allies in the workplace or in leadership did differently or did more of to make it change in the areas where it matters?
What do I wish they did more of? I wish people were braver. I wish people were braver. I think so many people are afraid of talking about diversity and inclusion or afraid to do so in any sort of deep way because they're afraid that they're going to screw up.
Right.
And I think my advice is you probably are going to screw up, right? You probably are.
Right.
But that's fine. I have never had anybody, I'll put it to you this way, and this is just personal. This isn't like, you know, this isn't work, but I have never had somebody say something that could potentially be offensive to me, but if I knew their heart was in the right place, that I actually took offense. Like right. if they were coming from a place of wanting to be more inclusive and wanting to learn more and from a genuine place and a place of interest in me as opposed to interest in proving themselves to be a good person, if that makes sense, right?
The performative allyship.
Correct. Right. Like if it was actual an interest in me and my differences, I can't think of a time when I've been like, you're a jackass, right? Ever.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
Including times when people say, Karen, I really want to ask you this question and I'm afraid of coming off like a jackass. So please accept this question in the spirit it's intended, right? It's coming from a place of love and curiosity. Man, you can pretty much get away with almost any question at that point. You know what I mean? Like you really can. And so I wish people were braver. I can think of friends that I've actually drifted apart from because they didn't necessarily come from that perspective. And I can think of friends who said dumb stuff, right? I'm trying
you
not to
curse
anything.
You can swear. It's fine. Dumb shit, I think is where you're going. Yes. Yeah.
So I've had friends that have said dumb shit, but are so switched on about realizing if they've made a mistake and amending their behavior going forward that they have become my closest friends, mm-hmm. right? Like they, you know, and I've always loved their courage and their bravery in that respect. And that to me is huge. So I wish that happened more at work, and it doesn't. And also there's a lot of stuff that there's a lot of really dumb shit that people will say, and they think it's okay because they have a Black friend or they've hired a Black employee or they've hired a Hispanic employee or they've hired a gay employee or, you know, whatever. And they're like, well, I can't be a bigot because Beth over there is gay or John over there is in a wheelchair. And so I'm clearly not a bigot, you know, that kind of crap.
Right.
I don't have time for that. Right. Like that's diversity and not inclusion. And you really have to work for the inclusion part.
And that's on allies to step up and be braver and point it out and call it out and make the changes. So,
right. And also just not rest on your laurels when you think, well, I've got a diverse group. So my work here is done.
Right.
I've hired well, I've hired diversely. So my work here is done. I don't need to do anything more. That's, I think, probably a really, really dangerous place to be.
Right. So I want to talk a bit about your midlife mixtape because you're doing the most, Karen. You've got, the beauty of different is her book. She's got her coaching. She's got her website. You've got a podcast. So let's talk about the Make Light podcast.
Yeah. So the Make Light podcast is basically a podcast that talks about how to infuse your life and work with purpose and ways that you can do that. And a lot of it is mostly me. But, you know, occasionally, probably every 3 or 4 episodes, I have a guest on as well with somebody who's doing something really meaningful. And usually it's somebody who's doing something really meaningful with their work in a way that only they could mm-hmm. do it. Right. So it's not like I'm just going to say it's not a podcast where you're going to go, oh, wow, I'm going to do that. Like that necessarily. But what I hope people do is go, wow, I love that that person took a chance on something that was really firing them up. That's something that I want to do. Right. Like I have this thing that I'm passionate about. The person, like the guest that's coming to mind right now is the amazing Mira Jacob, who is a writer. And she just came out with a book called Good Talk, Thanks. And it's about, or Good Talk is what it's called. It's about her life growing up as a daughter of Indian immigrants in actually New Mexico and then in New York and being a mom. And her husband is white and Jewish and she has a biracial kid. And it talks about sort of navigating all of this. But what was really interesting about this, it's a brilliant book, was it's a graphic memoir. And she learned to draw in order to write this book. Right? Because drawing was something that she kind of did in the margins of pages and stuff. And she thought, well, let me see what I can do. And what do I need to do in order to be able to do this? That kind of thing is what's really cool, is that she's making this statement about race in America. And she's doing it in this really accessible way. Like, I couldn't do that. Like, this isn't something that everybody could do. But I love that she took
it. I know, teaching yourself to draw at whatever age that is. Holy smokes.
And it's brilliant.
That's a heavy lift.
It's huge. And she's getting all kinds of awards. And she's doing really, really amazing stuff with it. I strongly recommend it.
I'll put a link in the show notes, people.
Yeah, please do. It's worth it. It's definitely. But people like that, who are just sort of like, this is something that I'm really interested and curious about. And I'm going to follow the curiosity to see where it goes and see how I can do that in service of my community at the very least, right? If not the world. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the podcast is sort of about. And it's, again, it's one of those things where I'm just lucky that I get a front row seat to do that. And I share stories and that kind of thing as part of it.
And how do you manage all the various iterations and aspects of this creative work? I mean, you've got a daughter in high school, you've got all this other stuff going on. How do you keep the flow going on your mixtape there?
Poorly.
Good. Thank God, not just me. Whew, relief.
Poorly. You know,
it's hard.
It's so hard. It's so ridiculous. So, I'm not joking about the poorly thing, but I will say that I'm having fun, which I think is really important, right? Like, it's, you know, it's again that follow your curiosity thing. Like, I'm having fun doing it. And one of the beauties, I guess, of being self-employed is that if I'm not having fun anymore, I can switch, right? Like, which you don't necessarily have that when you're working for someone. But right now, for example, I'm in a pretty big rest mode. Like, the podcast is on a break right now. And I'm finding myself like the last 2 weeks, I haven't worked on a Saturday, which is madness for me. Like, I was like, I'm doing nothing, right? And so, and I'm trying, you know, I'm trying not to have any guilt about it, which I'm actually succeeding at, right? I'm like, you know what? No, I'm going to take a break. And I find when I take a break, a lot of times I can get sort of my curiosity peaks again, right? Yep. So I can start going like, okay, well, how can I do this differently and that kind of thing? So, you know, I think in a lot of ways, rest is a radical act. It's a radical thing to move forward, right? And it's sort of counterintuitive, but I think that it really is. And so I'm trying to really honor that right now. But, you know, or I'm lazy. I don't know.
No, I think there's something to be said for having a little negative space in your life, and I don't do it enough. But I mean, that was always my mother-in-law always said, you got to let your kids get bored because that's where all the good ideas come from, which I thought was such a great piece of parenting advice and life advice. You have to put down the phone and stare into the middle distance once in a while.
Yeah. Well, don't you find, I mean, I think you and I are pretty close in age. Don't you find that, like, as you get older, that you're more likely to give yourself permission to do that? Like, I'm like, man, I'm tired, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, it's just telling
I've earned this.
Completely. Right? I was telling Karen before we started recording, we've just had this crazy week of graduations and ballet and the live episode of the podcast taped, and I slept like 11. I was so tired on Sunday afternoon. I fell into a face plant, woke up, ate dinner, went back to bed because I was just exhausted. So,
and God bless you for doing it is what I'm saying, right? Like, yeah, we need to do that every once in a while. Come on.
So one last question. What one piece of advice do you have for people younger than you, or do you wish you could go back and tell yourself?
My one piece of advice for people younger than me for sure would be follow your curiosity. And this is actually something that I recently heard Elizabeth Gilbert, actually, the author Elizabeth Gilbert said it, that following your passion is only good if you know exactly what your passion is. Right? So if you're like, well, I don't know what I'm passionate about, but following your curiosity is something everybody can do. It's certainly something that I did, and it's something that I'm even more at this age passionate about doing now. And when I look at, you know, both of us have young people as kids, and, you know, my daughter's in high school now. And when I think about just like what's ahead of her and how exciting that is, and that I hope she follows her own curiosity about what's interesting to her. You know, be safe. I say that now and I'm like thinking my 14-year-old's like, yeah, except drugs. Don't go follow your curiosity about drugs. but I think that probably would be the biggest thing is follow your curiosity and stay true to yourself while you do it, right? Like with a core of self-honesty, I think, as you do that. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. Well, Karen Walren, thank you so much for sharing your story today and coming on the Midlife Mixtape podcast. It was so great to catch up with you.
My pleasure.
Of course, the walk-up music question got stuck in my ear, and that was even before the very funny piece I read last week by my guest for episode 43, R. Eric Thomas, in which he analyzed all the various POTUS candidates' walk-up music. I'll add the link to the show notes page to that piece so you guys can read it. It is so funny, but I did go over to the Midlife Mixtape Facebook page and asked you guys what your walk-up music is. Here's a smattering of the responses. Tara said she would just let it be a loop of Beyonce singing, "Okay, ladies, now let's get in formation," which, I mean, that's always the right choice. When would that not work? David said Creep by Radiohead, which feels like it could work for more than one of the POTUS candidates and definitely the guy sitting in the Oval. Carrie would like Turn Down for What, Please? And in a similar vein, Melissa's is Club Can't Handle Me by Flo Rida. So I love that. I feel like we're feeling ourselves this week, or I thought that was the case until Wendy posted hers, which is Baby Elephant Walk by Henry Mancini. Go Google that. You guys remember that song.
What about you? What's your walk-up music? Email me and let me know at dj@midlifemixtape.com or reach out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at Midlife Mixtape. It's got to be better than the baby elephant walk, am I right? All right, you guys, thanks so much for listening. Hope you have a wonderful week.
I don't want to be this, don't want to be that. Don't want to give up, I want to give back. I want to be free by whatever means. Whatever you want from me, I want to be. Don't want to be this, don't want to be that. Don't want to give up, I want to give back. I want to be free by whatever means. Whatever you want from me, I want to be. I wanna be free by whatever.